Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm your co-host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by kind of an unusual guest. Not unusual, not that marketing or product is unusual, but just sort of outside the regular spectrum of the guests that we would normally have on, specifically because we're talking about how do we give salespeople the tools that they need and why marketers are so, let's say, not great at sales enablement. So I'd like to introduce Steve Marinick. He's the product marketing lead over at Guru, a good friend, and I'm looking forward to seeing what we can learn from you today, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on, Colin. And cool. Yes, I can't wait to talk about why marketers suck at sales enablement.
Great. The one of the reasons that that Steve and I connected is because, you know, I know Rick from Guru. I know you were at RJ, and I think what really struck me was your journey from helping them grow from, I mean, the overall number was much, much more, but specifically 8 salespeople to 36 salespeople in 9 months.
Yeah. So I was previously running enablement and product marketing at a company called RJ Metrics. And we just went through this rapid growth period post Series B, where we just grew our customer facing org like crazy. And all the while had a product that was changing very rapidly and playing in a very competitive space. Obviously, anything remotely to do with data or business intelligence is it's a very crowded space. So that presented a whole bunch of very unique and difficult enablement problems. And as you mentioned, I was actually a customer of Guru's there, and I can kind of talk about the way in which I approached enablement pre-Guru and post-Guru. Philosophically, a lot of the same things. Just kind of looking forward to talking about my journey throughout that whole process.
Great, man. Well, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us. So where does it start? Like, there's so many, I run into so many sales orgs that have, you know, their ICPs and their personas and their pitches and their playbooks and like a PowerPoint presentation. And, you know, you see their onboarding guide and they're like, yeah, here's a doc, go read it. You know, maybe the VP or director sits down with the new sales guy and is like, okay, you know, this is how it's going to go. I'll check in with you a couple of times, but like read this doc and then, you know, figure it out. So yeah. Obviously probably not maybe the best. I imagine going from 8 to 36, that just would fall apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way you described a normal process was very much how we had it. You know, we had a lot of docs. We had things living on our company wiki. We had things in Google Docs, Google Drive. We had tons of PowerPoint decks. And this kind of like innately had a few problems. The first was things were changing so fast that it was really hard to keep pace with all those changes, especially when I was the lone person responsible for enablement, which I'll kind of walk through a little bit later, how to assign people based on their subject matter expertise, things to keep it up to date, make sure you have some responsibility there, and ownership, most importantly. But the other is, you know, sales reps are creatures of habit, but they're also, you know, they work in very specific ways. And one of the things that I found very early on was anytime you asked a sales rep to stop what they were doing and go somewhere to get what they needed to have a productive sales conversation or engagement or get an asset, it really just kills and cripples their productivity. And in most cases, just their adoption of those things. And it's hard to have visibility into what they're using, what they're not. Again, because things are out of their workflow, we often, you know, it took me observing their patterns and actually just like watching a lot of reps work to notice that they just weren't using the things that we had as a product marketing team been producing for them.
And what's sort of the, I mean, marketing going off, salespeople not listening, salespeople going off, marketing people not giving us the right stuff, or, you know, what's the downfall of not having the, as a salesperson, not having the right material?
Yeah, pretty serious consequences. So the first of which is if they have anything that's out of date and they're giving, I mean, I've seen everything from product information being falsely relayed to a prospect, competitive information, And we'll just stop right there. Like, if your buyer is familiar with a competitor or has just trialed or demoed or seen a competitor, and you say something that they know is not true because you have out of date information or you can't access your battle card fast enough, you lose right there, right? You've lost their trust. And in such a, in a world where consultative selling is kind of the status quo, you lose all credibility. So that's one component of it. I've also seen things like having false or like not up to date pricing information. The ramifications of that, any VP of sales tuning in now is cringing just hearing that. It's just, yeah. I mean, like, and again, it comes down to keeping things up to date, also meeting the reps where they work. Don't be dependent on them to even go to your pricing page. If you've got a public pricing page, like, you can't be dependent on a prospect seeing that or dependent on a rep going there. You know, again, they work in very specific ways. And if you're not delivering that information into the apps that they're using every day, they're not going to use it. And, you know, either they remember the training that you had or they don't. Oftentimes they don't. So trying to figure out a way to continually enable them in the places they work, really the only way to avoid those problems.
So we talked about some of the problems, some of the challenges, but, you know, can you speak to some of the upside of getting these, you know, all the right tools and docs in place for your sales team?
Yeah, certainly. So one of the first things that I kind of noted was that there was just way too much information for reps to be responsible for that one person could own. So like I mentioned, we had a customer facing organization that was just growing so fast. And you know what the SDRs need and what the AEs need, everything's different, but it's all the same. I mean, the connective tissue there is the product, right? And one thing that I kind of failed to do was to be very aggressive about getting the various subject matter experts involved early on in the process and letting them know how important this was. So, I'll use the example of RJ again. So we were a business intelligence platform with tons of different integrations. There was one product manager specifically that owned all of the integrations. That was his role. So having up-to-date information on not only how existing integrations were working and what they were capable of, but also being really up-to-date with the roadmap and understanding like how far away certain integrations were is critical. And that was something that was changing every week, and we were just shipping integrations. I mean, it was an integrations arms race at that point compared to our competitors. And not having him own that subject matter expertise and be responsible for that was a failure on my part. And I think once we finally sat down and I had him listen to sales calls where reps were falsely relaying information about his product, the integration suite, it clicked. And then he wondered why he was getting so many questions from people about various integrations in, you know, all the while. If he had exposed all of that information and kept it up to date, he could have eliminated a lot of the shoulder tapping that he got.
Totally. And I assure you, it doesn't just happen in organizations that are trying to 4X their sales team in under a year. You know, I've seen this in small and large companies that I've worked at. And sometimes the larger you are, the more organized that marketing is, but then there almost gets to this point of like over-organization where it's like, okay, I got so many folders. It's so complex. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Or the flip side is like the small startup where it's like the information is changing or it's not even there yet.
Yep.
Or it's in a Google Doc or on your pricing table and your sales rep's like, where do I go for this?
Exactly. Exactly.
So help us dig us out of this. So where's like in your version sales enablement start? Maybe before we jump in, let's define sort of how do you see the sales enablement like we're talking about today?
Yeah. So enablement can mean a whole lot of things to a whole bunch of different people, from everything from a formal certification LMS program to sales asset management. And I see it as kind of all of those things, right? So I think there's a ton of value in certifying your reps, especially if you're a large sales organization. If you're not putting them through a formal and structured onboarding program, which was part of what we did when we were growing so fast. If nothing else, you've got a baseline to measure performance, right? Everyone's starting off with the same onboarding program. It allows you to measure results more accurately and fairly, quite frankly.
So we're talking onboarding docs, we're talking, or like that onboarding process, the certification, we're talking about preparing battle cards, one sheets, decks, et cetera.
Absolutely. And again, the way, if you were to boil down enablement very simply, it's giving reps all the tools, knowledge, and assets that they need to win a deal. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about revenue, and your enablement initiatives don't mean anything if they don't result in revenue. So it's a very important thing that as a marketing team, sometimes we lose sight of, right? Like, it doesn't matter how effective your particular deck is, right? Like, if that's not resulting in real revenue, it doesn't matter.
Totally. So talk to me about, like, where does this process start? Because we're really talking about, you know, this is all about content, like product content generation. I imagine you can't just jump in and be like, okay, I'm writing a battle card.
Yep.
Right. So walk, like, where does the beginning of that process start? If I'm sitting down today, I'm like, I don't have anything, but I want to start working on something like this. Where's that natural starting point for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So it all starts with two things: ideal customer profile and your buyer personas. Defining accounts that are most likely to buy from you at an economically viable threshold. So considering things like CAC and LTV. If you don't know your ideal customer profile, you don't know what you're building an enablement program for. You don't know how to best support those reps because you don't understand what kind of companies they have the most success with. And so that's a really good place to start. So digging through both qualitative and quantitative data to understand who you're having the most success with. You know, what do those profiles look like? Is there a specific vertical? Are there specific technologies that they have in place, right? So like Guru has a Slack bot. Like, one of the things that we note is that we do very well with companies that have deployed Slack. Things like that, indicators. And then also take into account churn, right? Like, that's another mistake I made early on. Like, it doesn't matter if you define a good ICP, if they are the kind of buyer that's not going to see continued value out of your software or your product, it doesn't matter. So who are we optimizing all of these things for? And generally speaking, marketing does a very good job of that. And personas as well, at least they get halfway there. So personas are, we can think of those as composite sketches of your ideal buyers within those ideal companies that you're selling to. And I use the word composite sketch because markets change, your product's changing, buyers are changing. And we try to build profiles around those commonalities. So understanding their behavior, understanding what motivates them, understanding what their objectives and obstacles are, allow your reps to have very specific and personalized conversations with those people. You know, I know that a VP of sales is going to have a much different conversation with our reps than somebody in a sales enablement function or somebody in a marketing function, right? So being able to understand those objectives, obstacles, and motivations is really important. And then I'll stop there. And I'll say that, like, again, I see a lot of marketing organizations do those two things very well. And that's where it stops. So they create a deck. They've got all their buyer personas in there. That's great. They give it to the reps. The reps might read through it once. They might not. And then that's it. They're done. Marketing teams across the board fail their reps by failing to operationalize these personas. And when I say marketing teams suck at sales enablement, I mean that they don't make that connection. They don't understand why somebody can't read their deck once and understand everything that they put together. And little do they know that, you know, sales reps are having hundreds of conversations. They're working so fast in so many different apps. They're getting pulled in so many different directions. They're responsible for so much information, right? Like, just having to know all your competitors and everything about your product and all of your pricing alone is just an overwhelming amount of information. So, you know, you ask me where to start. You start with those two things and then you figure out, how do I operationalize them, right? Like, how do I enable my reps to go after the right companies and speak to the right people in the right ways? And this boils down to what I call situational sales enablement, situational knowledge, situational assets. Everything we do, we need to think about through those two lenses, ICP and personas. And then we can keep drilling down. Like, I don't ever want to pitch you on a feature, right? Like, let's tell a customer story that demonstrates the outcome of that feature to somebody based on your industry, based on your persona, based on your use case, all those different things. There are a lot of different ways to just, like, you can think of it as a matrix, right? Like, have your knowledge and your assets and everything that you do from an enablement standpoint figured out from a situational standpoint. And that's a really, really, really good step that a lot of marketers for sure do not take when they think about, how do I actually make my reps more effective with all the things that I'm doing for them?
Mm-hmm. And so it's mapping, if I'm hearing you, it's mapping all of the pieces of marketing content, you know, to the situation so that it's quick and easy for the salesperson to consume when they're sort of in that specific context.
Yep. And everything, again, from one sheets and decks and case studies to competitive battle cards to all the product information. Like, if you're in a sales enablement function or if you're in marketing and trying to help with that, like, especially as, you know, I know there's a lot of product marketers out there, and like, if you are the conduit between the product team and the marketing team and the sales team, all of that product information needs to be situational in that respect too. And again, a great way to do this is just by focusing on the outcomes based on previous situations. So, you know, don't just rattle off a feature that might live in a deck somewhere. Tell a customer story based on the exact same scenario and make it discoverable and easy for a rep to be able to identify the situation. They have to know about the various situations, identify the situation, and then find exactly what they need related to that situation.
So let's talk about the types of content. I mean, you gave a quick list there, but like, let's go into each. Why don't we start with a high level list, and then we can go into sort of the benefits of each one just real briefly.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with customer stories, right? Like, that can mean everything from a quick case, from a case study to a G2 crowd testimonial, right? Yeah. A lot of my most valuable time from sales enablement is just sifting through G2 crowd reviews that Guru has, passing any feedback off to the product team. But like, from the enablement standpoint, just being able to distill those quick nuggets of like customer wins or customer stories. And then again, wrapping that around a situation, getting that in the rep's hands. So that is a huge component of how marketing can influence enablement.
What's the benefit of that? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, but like, help me understand like where and when this rep is going to use that.
Yeah, sure. So it's funny because another hard lesson that I learned from an enablement standpoint is it's not enough to just know features and know the product. The natural inclination for reps, especially when they have a feature-rich product they're selling, is to rattle them off, right? Instead, having them understand what questions to ask, again, based on those roles. Like if you're a VP or a CRO, and I'm asking you questions that might more pertain to somebody on the marketing or sales enablement side, you're not going to know how to answer those questions, or you're going to lose the engagement. So asking a good question, and then instead of just rattling off a feature, answer that question with a customer story. Instead of saying, we have analytics, yada, 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 I can say, well, how do you currently understand which of your enablement initiatives are working and which don't? Oh, well, I don't. You know, I just create a bunch of stuff and give it to the reps and take anecdotal feedback. Oh, great. So let me tell you about a customer of ours who were able to identify these gaps using our analytics and being able to, you know, how they ended up. Like, again, focusing on the outcomes of that through that narrative, it's a much more valuable way to deliver all that enablement. And wrapped up in all that is the product information too. So, they can get super specific about the product, and we need to have that information too. If they start asking like, okay, you've got built-in analytics, like, do you have an open API? What is that API capable of? And we take it a layer deeper at Guru. Like, we have a customer story for that too, right? But like, also having them be able to say, oh, our API is capable of X, Y, and Z. But again, like, the more customer stories you can roll in, the more genuine your engagement with them is going to seem, and the more credibility you have, really, because like, anybody can rattle off a product data sheet.
So, in your specifically when you're doing this for yourself, you're finding this customer story on G2 Crowd, you're tying it into sort of a situation, and you've got, are you actually giving them the sort of that question to prompt?
Like, yep.
So how do you guys, you know, how do you measure the effectiveness of XYZ? You're actually giving them that.
Absolutely. And we try to take our reps down a path where they have questions to ask each of our personas. So again, it all starts with the ICP. They have to identify that ICP, and it's hard to develop personas unless you know what those companies actually look like. So they have questions based on that, those personas, that take them down specific paths. And again, they're all tied to those objectives and challenges and what they're ultimately trying to accomplish.
Cool. So types of content. We talked about customer stories. What's the next sort of major piece?
Yeah. So I'll use the RJ Metrics example again. And in previous roles as well, like competitive battle cards are huge. Very, very rarely will somebody have a conversation without even being aware of other competitors, right? Like whether they're down an evaluation path across multiple products or not, they're going to want to understand differences.
So tell me what's on your battle cards. Cause we just did an episode with Kim Brown where we went into her battle cards. And I think she had built them. I want to say she had built them specific to each persona, right? Yep. Where I think you're talking about building specific to each competitor, right?
Yeah. So we have both. So we have persona based competitive battle cards, like the, what's in it for me, what's the actual difference going to be for you. Mm-hmm. And then by competitor as well. And, This is a great opportunity to talk about why marketers suck at sales enablement. It's a great example. I used to create these like very aesthetically pleasing one sheets on each competitor that had big check boxes that they had this or they don't have this. Company overviews, who they were funded by, who their customers were. I quickly realized sales reps don't care. They don't care at all. And like, that's very valuable for me to know just in understanding the market and our competitors. Sales reps really only need to know what are the three or four ways I can deposition this competitor on the phone immediately, or like the four bullet points I can send to a prospect via email. And it was a huge mistake I've made. And, you know, trying to put yourself through the lens of the rep, seeing how they work, it's challenging, and I have to remind myself to continue to do it today. But like, it was very difficult for me to give up my very pretty looking big battle cards and just literally have, based on the situation, the four things, and then allow them to access the other documents too. So like, if they want to go crazy and get super granular with what a competitor is capable of or not, that's great. But really what they need are just give me the quick hits, and none of that works if it's not discoverable, right?
Cool. So one of my favorite parts of this podcast is like, we're here talking about, this is how you actually do things. Not, you know, this is what the high level of like, this is what everybody should do, but this is what Steve does. So Steve, yeah. I'm going to give you the opportunity. Can you show me pull up one of your battle cards?
Yeah.
Just absolutely. Do a screen share if you got one in front of you.
Let me pull one up.
I don't always put people quite on the spot like this. Sometimes we get them to prepare ahead of time.
But it's great. No. Yeah,
just want to test your sort of keyboard and mouse skills.
Absolutely.
Here.
So I will show you a demo environment. I'll share my screen. Let me know when you can see that.
Yep. Yeah, we got it.
So this is very simply like Guru versus Wiki. I'm obviously using like a pretty generic example. But again, these are the 5 points in which this is all the rep really needs to know for the most part. And we've linked them to other documentation here, another blog post that kind of reinforces this point if they need something to sell. And what Guru actually enables them to do is actually copy this information and paste it right into an email. So with the browser extension, they can just pop this open in any web-based app, Salesforce, Gmail, LinkedIn, and search Guru versus Wiki. Find this very quickly. Nice. So again, the discoverability is key. And being able to just, you know, again, deposition them very quickly is really critical.
And so, I mean, I get the Guru makes this easy, but you don't necessarily need anything special to do this.
No, you can definitely not.
Like what we're looking at here for those that are listening is basically a screen with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bullet points. And then, you know, here's a post that explains the challenges of trying to use Wiki for enterprise knowledge. And it's got a link to a blog post, right? And so it's, I'm sure your tool makes it so much easier, but this is something that, you know, you very like a great starting point would be, let's just get some Google Docs that are linked together.
Absolutely.
And then once that turns into chaos, then find tools. But I think exactly. that everybody can do this sort of.
Yeah. For sure. There are a number of different ways to do it, and you can do it for free. And I think like it starts with having a single source of truth, right? Like every single time I talk to somebody struggling with sales enablement, they have things living in multiple places. So a great place to start, have the ICP, have the personas, have everything kind of, you know, structured in a situational way. And also have a single source of truth, you know, have one place for the reps to look at all this stuff and find it. So they're not bouncing in between different, you know, Salesforce knowledge or an asset, digital asset management or a wiki or Google Docs, like have one place for all of your things. Make it easy, make it discoverable. And that's a great starting point for sure.
Cool. So let's, we can kill the screen share for now. What's another, there you go. So what's the next? So we've talked about customer stories, competitive battle cards. What other types of content should people be creating?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously the sales deck is incredibly important as well. So having those sales decks, again, structured by situation. So, you know, we even try to account for things like we've got multiple buyers. You know, I've given demos to seven people, all from different departments. So we have, we try to accommodate for every particular situation. We don't have one sales deck, right? Like we've got a sales deck for every single persona we have. And we also have sales decks that try to accommodate multiple buyers from different, representing different personas. So that's another example of like, that's a very easy thing. Like everyone, is creating their things in PowerPoint or Google Docs. So like create those decks, make them situational. Everyone knows they're living in Google Docs. And you know, that way you avoid a lot of the problems of disparate systems. So another is one-sheets. And one-sheets are particularly difficult because I find that sales wants one-sheets for everything. So trying to understand where exactly a good use case for one-sheets are and where they're not as effective. Generally what I try to do is like collect as much anecdotal feedback, actually observe the reps, have them, you know, like actually watch what they're looking at. And sometimes it's just like they need additional training or documentation on certain features and they don't feel comfortable enough just talking about it or showing it. They need that. It's almost like a crutch, like just a one sheet. However, you run into the situation where I'm talking to you, Colin, you want to go show Aaron something after this call, you need something to reinforce one thing that you're really interested in, analytics. So when that happens, that's what you try to create those one sheets around.
Gotcha. So the one sheets are sort of situational based around exactly. something. You need a piece of follow-up content to send to this one prospect. We just had a call. I need one follow-up.
Definitely.
Because I committed to sending him something on the call that he can go look at and go review.
Yep. And some people are just very, you know, they like to digest things in a visual way and they kind of want to hold on to that, especially when you're talking to, you know, in our case, that sales enablement persona that has to go make an ROI case, right? Like if you're selling to the champion of the product, they're usually the ones that are going to require those assets and trying to figure out a way to create them such that when they go to the buying table, they can drop that down on the table and make their case. Is a really important thing. And for marketers out there, like talk to these people, like get on the phone with your champions, get on the phone with people that have had successful and unsuccessful attempts at getting executive buy-in, understand what went right, what went wrong. And you know what, for those that went wrong, like maybe there are patterns in there that will help you identify your ideal customer profile. Maybe there's something about that organization that you just don't do well with. So, you know, talk to as many people as possible is another thing that I think marketers tend to live in their own worlds. And just talking to both your users and people that haven't successfully converted, there's just so much to glean there.
Great. So we've got our one sheets, we've got our decks, battle cards. What else are we missing before we move on to, you know?
Yeah. Two big things, the product FAQs, right? Like we've spoken a lot about that. Being able to anticipate those specific questions about your product and being able to you know, the first thing we try to do is tell a customer story. Somebody asks you about, again, like analytics, you know, a lot of people out there listening probably have some sort of embedded analytics in their product. Maybe they don't, but, you know, having a customer story to support that, but also having, again, 3-4 bullet points to explain the feature in plain English is really, really important. Not just throw a whole bunch of product documentation at them. You know, I had a former VP of sales, and we were both fans of The Wire. So I don't know if you watched The Wire, have seen The Wire, but in the first episode of The Wire ever, Nick Nolte, who's the main protagonist, he gets in trouble and he has to write a report to the chief deputy. And as his boss is telling him he has to write this report, he says, "Hey, deputy likes dots. All right, dots. You know, bullet points is what he was saying." Mm. And I had a VP of sales always reference that and say, "Listen, sales reps, they like dots. All right, just make it easily consumable." Because what we don't understand as marketers is like, you know, as a product marketer, I'm not on the phone getting hammered with questions and fumbling. You know, I'm in Salesforce. I'm in my email client, outreach, sales loft, whatever people are using. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm like bouncing all in between these various apps. And I just need whatever, you know, whatever I can use to add value to that conversation as quickly as possible. And having that in bullet points is really, really critical. And then common objections. So again, like these are persona based. Like we know that certain, you know, like VP of sales, every sales tech that VP of sales has ever bought, he's going to have a question about adoption, right? Like have ways to deposition those objections as quickly as possible. And then again, like tie that into outcomes always. So document all the outcomes through those customer stories. And it's just like a great way to weave all of these different pieces of enablement together into one well-oiled machine.
Awesome. So we've collected all of this data, and we've got, you know, all of this content sort of collected and structured. You talked earlier about, you know, how do we operationalize? And you said, okay, now we have to operationalize. It sounds easier said than done. So like, what is that step? What is the critical piece that we need to do to sort of build this into, you know, keep it to make sure it's a working document? And not just something that's written once and then lost in Google Drive forever.
Absolutely. So it kind of all ties together with some of the points that we've hit on. The first point is operationalizing those like personas and those situations by constructing your content in such a way that allows for that. The second is getting subject matter experts to buy into why this matters to them. And it's funny, I once described my role in enablement turning into almost like a sales role, because I had to go to the product team. I had to go to the other marketers that had, you know, specific subject matter expertise and get their buy-in and let them know like, this is important. And the ramifications of us not all kind of collectively owning this are serious, and they have an impact on the company's bottom line. And then again, like single source of truth, none of this matters if reps don't know where to go for things. And I can't tell you, I would say 95% of sales organizations have different places, more than three places that they host all of these things that, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, again, I live that too. And it makes it very confusing, you know. Do my one sheets live in here? Do they live in here? You know, is that product information, persona information in the wiki, or is it in Google Drive, or is it in Salesforce? Like, you know, it's really, it makes it very difficult. And then go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you're a sales rep and you're searching your Outlook for that PDF, it's probably out of date.
Yes. And
as you're describing that, I'm picturing myself doing this, you know, not super recently, but more recently than I'd like to admit.
It's interesting too, because we see that, like, we even see that, like, reps sometimes just like downloading things and putting them on their desktop because that's the easiest thing and they know where it is. What happens when you change that deck? What happens when you update that product information or the, you know, come out with a new case study, or, you know, like, they don't have access to that information because their desktop becomes their single source of truth. because it didn't otherwise exist. That is the problem of what I believe is referred to as the undernet. And you have no control over what happens on that undernet. So it's really important that you try to avoid that. And the first way you do that is by having that single source of truth.
Gotcha. So final comments here, the way to sort of operationalize things, we've got to have that single source of truth, right? It's got to be, you know, the content owners, the content experts are creating this. And what was that third piece?
The single source of truth, yeah. Content ownership. And again, like thinking through the lens of the, you know, operationalizing those personas through those situations. Those are really the three things. And I think like for anyone there, that's either in a dedicated enablement function or somebody that, you know, is finding themselves in like doing some of those things, because oftentimes that role doesn't exist at smaller companies. This is a really good place to start. And again, like I can't emphasize that the single source of truth thing enough. It really, and like, if you can take it a level farther, there are a number of different tools that help bring that stuff into the rep's workflow. And anytime you can meet a rep where they are working, whether it be in Salesforce, whether it be in SalesLoft, Outreach, Gmail, that makes everything so much easier. If you can't get that far, if you're not ready to invest in that, then absolutely single source of truth. And make sure they know where it is, and you kind of counter the discoverability problem to an extent that way.
Cool. Steve, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Colin.
Right on, man.
All right. Bye-bye.